everyone, and welcome to Minute 11 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we take a wild trip through the 1987 John Hughes comedy Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today, and hopefully all week if he decides to stick around, is Sean German of the Next Scene Podcast. Welcome to the show, Sean.
All right, yeah, thanks a lot for having me. I don't know how long I have. I'm waiting on a plane that's due to board any minute now. So as soon as that happens, I'll have to go. But you have me until then.
Okay, well, maybe we'll get you on the flight also. How's that? During the course of the week.
We'll see. Because, you know, flights never get delayed or anything.
No, of course not.
I'm not really.
Of course not.
Great. But yeah, until then, I'm very excited to talk about this film.
Right. As a reminder to everybody who listened to the first episode, so Sean and his brother Brian actually did a Groundhog Day Minute by Minute podcast where they did some special episodes, and they actually did 4 special episodes about this movie. So I gave them a lot of credit for helping me think of doing this idea. And thankfully I got their blessing to do it in this format where it's actually minute by minute instead of day by day. So it's the same, but different. So
yeah,
I appreciate
absolutely.
That.
I mean, I think this is just the greatest Thanksgiving film there is, you know, the best Thanksgiving film. And as a holiday special, yeah, we broke it down over the 3 days that that Neil and Del are on the road together. But yeah, this film definitely deserves the, you know, an even deeper dive, the minute by minute treatment that you're giving it here. So so thank you.
Yeah.
And thank you for having me as a guest.
Well, and you're the third guest. So, you know, we got you early on, and it was random also. So that worked out well. All right. Well, minute 11 begins with a shot of the O'Hare arrivals board, and it ends with Del chuckling, which we're going to use that phrase quite often throughout the entire movie, with Del chuckling. Del's the guy who likes to chuckle. You know, he's a chuckler.
Yeah. Del, you know, Del amuses himself even when he's not amusing the people around.
Exactly. But that works. So why not? You know, he amuses the viewer at the same time. And that's what we want, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's us.
We're the viewer. Exactly.
We're amused.
So on Friday, we actually ended the episode by seeing the shot of the flight status port where it says, welcome to O'Hare. And then we have a list of 7 different flights, and it all says delayed on all of them. And as this minute begins, in the first second, it all switches from delayed to canceled. So the first thing that I noticed here, and I noticed it last week also when we talked about it, is do you remember, Sean, where they're flying from?
So they're in I know they're coming from New York. I don't know if they specify which New York area airport specifically that Neil's flying out of. I assume it's LaGuardia, since that's the first one. Now, this is the 830.
Yeah, but, well, let me...
It's the first one on the...
Right. So, in the second episode, I believe, when we get to see a shot of Neil's ticket, we see that he's flying from JFK to O'Hare.
Okay.
And then when we get to the airport, they show it's a quick shot of LaGuardia. And here they're actually telling us that he's supposed to be coming in from LaGuardia. So I'm not sure where the mistake is. Is the mistake on the original ticket, or is the mistake throughout this entire, the rest, you know, these other places in the movie where they're mentioning LaGuardia? So, I mean, we'll never know, but there is a discrepancy, obviously. You know, maybe he changed planes. Maybe he was supposed to go from JFK and then switch to LaGuardia. That could be. But, I mean, that's not mentioned in the script or in the movie at all.
Yeah. Well, his co-worker mentions a later flight, though. I think he just says...
No, John, you know, John just says, I'm going to wait for the 8. That's all he says. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, he could just be... That could be there's an 8 o'clock flight from JFK, or it could just, you know, a shorthand abbreviating, just saying the 8 versus the 6, and knowing at that point in that conversation, he doesn't have to get, you know, exact down to the minute.
Right. Exactly. But again, there is a discrepancy here. So we're not really sure where he's supposed to be flying. It could just be that you know, when they took this shot, that they just made a mistake and just wrote LaGuardia instead of writing JFK.
Yeah. And it's not a big deal. Like, it could be, I mean, the cities are big enough that there could be flights, depending on the airline, maybe different airlines. One flies
No, but he's on flight 909.
Kennedy to
He is
O'Hare.
on flight 909. It's the same flight number.
Oh, so that is his flight.
That's his flight. And you know, it says that it's supposed to come in at 8:30. So obviously, you know, the plane has already been delayed an hour and 45 minutes because originally he was supposed to get in at 6:45.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
But I just love the fact that the way that the sign switches so quickly from delayed to canceled. You know, it's like you hit the jackpot, you know, and they're just constantly, one after the other, they're just quickly changing them and stuff like that. I mean, I also wonder right. what happens when someone cancels a flight. You know, what does it mean it's canceled?
You don't go. Yeah, it makes sense that it's the local weather, you know, that it's not a mechanical thing. So it is something that would affect every flight
right.
coming into Chicago.
Maybe
it's Chicago weather.
Maybe it's terrorists. Could it be? I mean, we're not in Washington.
Could be.
But, you know, it could be. I mean, this is 3 years before terrorists actually showed up in Washington to take down the airport. So you never know. They never thought of this idea beforehand. Who knows?
Right. Well, then it just turns into a diehard crossover.
Yes. Yes. Which would be fun. You know, wouldn't you like seeing either Neil or Dell dealing with Hans Gruber?
Yeah, I want to see Hans dealing with Dell for an evening, and then he throws himself off the roof of the building just to get away.
Yeah, that makes sense. Sounds like fun. So we get to see a shot of the arrivals sign, and I mean, they got seven different flights that are supposed to be coming in all at random times within an hour and a half time period. So we got, you know, LaGuardia, New Orleans, Des Moines, San Francisco, Roanoke, Houston, and Baton Rouge. And they decide to cancel all of these flights. So I guess that really sucks for anyone who's stuck in O'Hare right now, because if it's because of the weather in O'Hare, they're not leaving the airport either. So then the next shot we get is a whole group of people waiting around in the airport. Now, the irony of this is that these look like people that are about to try and take flights out. They're not, you know, has nothing to do with the arrivals, has nothing to really do with Neil and Dell's flight that is being delayed. These are people who are trying to get out. Now, I tried counting how many people are in this scene. Did you do that by any chance?
No.
What would
I'm
be
guessing it's a lot.
What would be your guesstimation? Again, I can't give an exact number. It's a close guesstimation based on how I counted. But what
I would
do you think?
Put it in, if I can give you a range, I would guess, like, if you're counting like heads, like faces, I'm guessing in the range of like 70, 75, somewhere around there.
Okay, I counted 120.
Wow. Okay, that many.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in here. They got a lot. Yeah. I wonder if they got real extras, or they just, you know, John Hughes went to the airport one day when he knew that everyone was going to be waiting, and decides to just take a shot and see what goes on there. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, this is great. Like, as you said, so this is, they don't really tell us. I assume this is O'Hare. These are probably people waiting to leave, because at this point, Dell and Neil are on the plane, and in the next little thing will
right.
show us, you know, an exterior shot of the plane, and then we see them. So they've taken off. They're not in an airport.
Right.
But I think, you know, so we don't necessarily need to see this. And these aren't people that Neil and Dell are going to interact with. But
no, not at all. See,
it adds to the atmosphere and the flavor, you know, the frustrations of holiday travel and weather delays and all that stuff. So, I mean, it's only a few seconds, which is all we need just to kind of give us that little bit of flavor of, you know, just the frustration
right.
and helplessness in that situation.
Exactly. Now, I think it might have been better if they would have shown us the people waiting for the flights to come in. Those would be more mm-hmm. frustrated, because here, you know, you're waiting for your loved one to come in on the air, on, you know, on one of these seven flights that have been canceled. And now you're sitting there waiting for them, and you can't leave the airport because of the weather also, you know, that type of thing, because there's really no direct connection between all these people that are supposed to be departing and mm-hmm. Neil and Dell and the sign saying that all those flights were canceled. So no, right. I again, as you said, it's trying to give us the atmosphere, and it works. I mean, you have people really just sitting on the ground waiting, not knowing what they're going to be doing, where they're going to go. and things like that. So I looked around at these people and I was trying to find one person that would stand out among all of them. And I actually see someone who's wearing a sweatshirt that has a very interesting symbol on it. So I went and looked it up, and it's actually from the Sigma Alpha Mu fraternity, which is known as SAMI. So I decided to check, see what that is. So it was a fraternity that was founded in 1909. It was originally considered only an all-Jewish fraternity. And in 1953, they opened it for all religions to join in. Their headquarters were originally...
How nice of them.
Yeah. Their headquarters were in New York, and now it's in Indianapolis. There are currently 150 chapters across the U.S. and Canada, and there are 67,000 members of this fraternity. So then I actually wanted to go a little bit deeper and try to figure out more information about this particular fraternity. And I actually found a list of prominent people who were part of this fraternity. So you have LeVar Burton, who's from Star Trek The Next Generation. Marv Albert, who's a sports commentator. Ernie Davis, who was the Heisman Trophy winner in 1961. You have Robert Zimmerman, who's known as Bob Dylan, who is from there. Paul Michael Glaser, who's an actor and director. Hank Greenberg, who was one of the first big Jewish baseball players. He played for the Detroit Tigers back in the 1930s. Bernie Madoff, probably not someone that anyone really wants to discuss. Don Most, do you know who that is?
Don Most?
You might know
him. The guy from Happy Days.
Yeah, it's Ralph Mouth.
Oh, wow. Yeah, Ralph Mouth.
He's actually known as Donnie Most, but yeah, Don Most.
Yeah, I know him as Donnie. That's what kind of threw me off. But I'm like, Most? I know a Most.
Why exactly.
Is that familiar?
You have Philip Roth, who's an author.
Okay.
Ron Silver, who was an actor.
The actor.
Okay. David Stern, who's the commissioner of the NBA.
Yeah.
And then I found Jim Hartung, who's an Olympic gymnast. It's just interesting, you know, to find strange connections in movies like this. You know, obviously I was hoping that I'd find like John Hughes or Steve Martin or someone, you know, but I couldn't find anyone connected to the movie that actually is part of that fraternity. Yeah.
Okay. So there's no real connection. It seems like this may have been either the extra showed up with his, you know, with his fraternity sweatshirt, or like you said, maybe just John Hughes showed up with a, you know, camera in in the actual O'Hare and said, oh, let's just shoot some B-reel. You know, we'll just get some background shots of people in an airport and just happen to catch, this guy with a sweatshirt.
Exactly. Then we get a shot of the plane flying in the air. Now, this plane looks so fake. This looks like they probably use like the same footage from Airplane or something like that with the way they did it.
Yeah, and actually, according to IMDb trivia, that's what this is. This is footage from the film Airplane.
Oh wow,
the exterior shot, and it doesn't look real. The way it's moving, you could.
Yeah, it's like flapping its wings back and forth.
They're not going for the utmost in realism in terms of this model plane.
Well, I don't think they really need to.
yeah, it's just kind of setting the mood and say, hey. We're switching from the airport to the airplane itself, and it's just a second or two.
Exactly.
That's the job.
Yeah, completely. And then we get to see Neil and Dell sitting in the plane. Neil reaches up and plays around with the air conditioning nozzle, you know, which is something that's pretty funny that he's doing that, because we've all done that. You know, you're sitting on the plane and it's hot. And you're opening that little nozzle and you're hoping that a little bit of air is going to just come out just to make you feel a little bit better.
Yeah. Do you think I guess what's the issue with Neil and flying? Because he's not, you know, he's not afraid of flying. He doesn't have a full on phobia, but he does seem very uncomfortable. As you said, the way he kind of plays with the nozzle, trying to get some air. And then later, I don't know if it's this week, maybe next, or probably later this week, where
Well, it's got to be this week. We're only dealing with the plane this week.
So it must be later this week. But I think it's maybe not today, but in a future minute, where he's very uncomfortable, and it seems more than just it's more than just being annoyed that this guy sitting next to him won't shut up.
Right. I think it has more to do with the fact that he's used to being in first class,
mm-hmm.
and that here he's stuck in coach, and he feels that he's crammed in as opposed to having much more room to move around, I guess. That's what I would think.
Yeah, it just feels a little cramped. Yeah, I know. Not that I can really afford business class or first class. There's been a couple times where I've been able to either flying for business and get the company to pay for it, or sometimes I've been able to catch infrequent flyer miles to get the bump up. I'm not a fan of flying myself. I'm kind of sympathetic to Neil in this situation, particularly being in the middle seat where it's like it's not a phobia. I can fly, but I find it very uncomfortable. I'm just like him. I'm going to be playing with the air, trying to get comfortable. I'm going to want, my preference is to have more room to stretch out when I can. And follow up on the earlier scene where he's arguing with the flight attendant about his seat assignment.
Yeah, exactly. So then Del begins to introduce himself, and he goes, "I never did introduce myself. Del Griffith, American light and fixture, director of sales, shower curtain ring division. I sell shower rings, the best in the world. And you are?" So first of all, this is not a real company, American Light and Fixture. Mm-hmm. I looked it up. There is a website for American Light and Fixture, but it's like this very basic website, and it has pictures of like five different people in them, including Dell. So, but the way that he speaks to Neil, and he says, "And you are," he's a chatty guy. He's looking mm-hmm. for someone to talk to. And Neil just doesn't want it. And then Neil turns to him and goes, "Neil Page." He doesn't really give it in a, he's like, "Don't bother me with the way that he responds." So, Steve Martin does a great job with this character by making him seem as if he just doesn't want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And Del does want to be there. Del is a guy who lives in the moment, loves every minute of what he's doing. It doesn't matter where he is. He makes the best of every situation and stuff like that. So at that point, Del turns to him and goes, "Neil Page, pleased to meet you, Neil Page. So what do you do for a living, Neil Page?" I think people should have a drinking game. How many times does Del say Neil Page, instead of just calling him, Eddie? And he goes, "Marketing." "With marketing. Super, super, fabulous. Isn't that nice?" And at this point,
I wonder if that's just like a salesman trick to help him remember the name
that he's by saying the name over and over. I didn't think about
that.
Because
he seems to remember. He remembers everyone he's ever sold shower curtain rings to. He knows all these. He knows all the hotel clerks. And then later on, when they're in Wichita and they take the taxi to the hotel, and he's like getting out, and he's referring to the driver by name.
Right.
Like he's a guy, like, remembering names is very important to Del, maybe not as important to Neil.
Okay, that makes sense.
We'll probably learn about him later. Yeah.
Yeah. So then Del pulls out this little wallet and shows and shows all the different types of shower curtain rings that he sells. It's pretty funny that he actually has that he it makes sense that he would have it. But it's not something that someone would think in general that, a marketer, someone who's in sales is going to be walking around with something like this. So it's just fun. It's a nice little cute little wallet type of thing. So we see Neil just doesn't really want to have anything to do with him. And he picks up a magazine and starts reading the magazine next to him. Did you notice what magazine it is?
I did not.
Okay, so it's GQ.
Is it GQ? Okay.
It's GQ, and I looked it up, and he's reading the May 1987 issue, which has Kevin Costner on the cover.
Okay.
I actually looked it up. It cost $3 at the time, and if you want, you can buy it on eBay now for $50. I don't know why someone would want to, but that's a separate issue. And you
I
can
guess, you
see.
know, you're a fan of the film. You want to maybe want to recreate some of these scenes.
Maybe you can. Okay. So when I looked up the magazine itself, so I looked at what articles it has. So they have, it's called Total Summer Fitness, Expert Tips to Look and Feel Great, Real Unzipped, The King of Divorce, Men's Secret Passions. And there's this Kevin Costner article, which I actually was able to find the entire article online. We're not going to read it. Don't worry. We're not going to go that deep. It was an article. There was an interview with Kevin Costner in May 1987 by Ellen Stern. And it's called Kevin Costner on the Ledge. So there were just a few things in the article that I found funny because Kevin Costner wasn't a known name in 1987. At this point, he hadn't really been in very many movies. He wasn't a lead actor. And he was in the process of filming The Untouchables when they did this interview, which was one of his first films as a lead actor. And one of his quotes in the article is, "I have kind of a quiet career. It may be the quietest career in Hollywood." That pretty much changed a few weeks later, a few months later.
Yeah, with the Untouchables. I mean, he'd been in a few things like The Big Chill, although I guess
Well, the Big
looking at
Chili was
IMDb,
cut
it
out
says,
of. Big
yeah,
Chili was
scenes
cut out of.
deleted.
Yeah, he was in Silverado.
Yeah, it was in Silverado, probably his biggest film before, up to this point. At this point, I would have known him from Fandango, which I love. I think it's a great film, but in terms of, yeah, probably appropriate to describe the career up to that point as quiet.
Yeah, but he described his career as that. That's the funny thing. That's what he thought about himself. I mean, and I guess it's a good point to give a little shout out to Jim's Silverado Minute, which is running parallel to us right here. So they're also on episode 11 today. So you can go over there to the Silverado Minute and catch up on those 10 and a half, 11 episodes just to reach where we are too, if anyone who's interested in
Yeah,
that.
check that out. So did you, so in looking up the information on this issue of GQ, which article do you think was written by a friend of Neil's? And do you think, is that just a line?
That's just a line. That's just a line. I don't think I mean, it's a nice line, but like, why would a guy in marketing have a friend who's writing an article in GQ? It sounds like he's stretching it a little bit. I mean, it could be. I'm not saying
I
people in
agree.
marketing don't have friends who write articles.
People in
I'm not saying
marketing
that.
do have friends. What it could be, sometimes kind of articles are written, and I don't know if GQ does this. Sometimes there's articles or items in like the daily local news, the evening news, that are really they're really advertisements. They're kind of plants. They're more press releases than real stories. So maybe it's, one of his marketing friends managed to get something placed. Maybe, someone who's doing the marketing for the Untouchables
Could
managed to
be.
get managed to get Kevin Costner on the cover and get the article. But I agree. I think that's a line he's kind of beating Dell to kind of just impress upon how much he doesn't want to talk, right?
Yeah, exactly. So there's one other quote that I wanted to bring up from this article. So they discussed in this article, they interviewed also Lawrence Kasdan about working with Kevin Costner. And the question, and so then Kasdan says that he's fearless, he's not cautious, he's just like a movie star. So if and it says if you ask Kasdan, if you ask Kasdan if Costner would have been a good Indiana Jones. And he says, sure, but he really could have been McQueen in The Great Escape. So for me, that was just great, because, last season we did The Great Escape, and here I was able to find a quote from an article in 1987 that mentions The Great Escape and is connected through Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. So that works well.
Everything's connected.
Yeah, completely. So Dell continues bothering him, and as you mentioned, he Neil just looks over him and goes, "Look, I don't want to be rude, but I'm not much of a conversationalist. And I'd really like to finish this article. A friend of mine wrote it." So, and And Dell's responses to this are great. He's like shakes his head back and forth. He shakes his whole body back and forth by saying, "Yeah, I understand, I understand." And the truth is, he doesn't understand. He doesn't really. He's a guy who doesn't pick up on these social cues. And he goes, "Oh, don't let me stand in your way. Please, don't let me stand in your way. The last thing I want to be remembered is an annoying blabbermouth." And then starts chuckling.
Yeah, because of course, then for approximately, and there's a, don't want to spoil it in case there's anyone who hasn't seen the entire film yet, but basically for the next hour or so, all we get from Dell is annoying blabbermouth.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
right up front, one of the first things he says is, "Well, the last thing I want to be remembered as."
Right.
So
Right.
I chuckled along with Dell at that line.
Yes, completely. Me too. Now, one of the things I forgot to mention before about this article, when Neil is saying that he's trying to finish his article that a friend of his wrote, right? He just picked up the magazine a few seconds before. We see him pick up the article, pick up the magazine, and start flipping through and finding an article. So he must be just, this might be a lie. This must be a lie. There's no way that this is true because he just got through it a few seconds ago. Unless you want to really stretch it and say, okay, he started reading it like 20 minutes ago and then put it down and then picked it up again. But I don't really think that that's no, not really. And then Dell begins to say, nothing. And then the minute gets cut off. So we'll have to come back tomorrow to find out what exactly he says in that next quote. So, did you have anything else you wanted to say about this minute before I start talking about the different changes from the script, from the original script?
No, I'm about good. Yeah, I'm good on
Okay.
my
Now,
notes for this minute. So let's
I'm
continue.
assuming since you did this day by day, you're a little bit familiar with the fact that the script is really, really long, and the original cut of the movie was nearly 4 hours.
Yeah, supposedly there, well, there's, yeah, there's like, I mean, this is perfect comedy movie length. It's like 90 minutes or 80 something.
93 minutes.
Yeah, supposedly there's like a 2 or 2.5 hour cut out there somewhere, and then there's a like there's footage for a theoretical like 4 hour cut that could be made. But yeah, this particular film, I think John Hughes in general is known for writing a lot and filming a lot. He writes very long
Yes.
scripts, and then he likes to keep the camera rolling and doing a lot of takes just to kind of get. Letting the actors kind of work things out and getting a lot. So yeah, this is yeah. So this yeah, there's a, there's it's a very long script and there's a lot of footage that was done.
Right. So there aren't that many differences between script and this minute, but the first one is that when Hughes uses description in his scripts, they're just great because when Dell reaches his hand over, it says Neil looks at Dell's paw, reluctantly takes it. Dell pumps his arm. I mean, this is something that they're writing in a script. They're, and the fact that he used the term paw made me laugh because in just a few. In just a few months or a few months earlier, John Candy played Barf in baseball. So
Spaceballs.
I'm not really sure if that is true or not. Now, the conversation that the two of them have is a little bit different here. But there's a whole thing that you have Dell take out a calendar with naked women on it that was cut out. For obvious reasons, because it just doesn't really add much to it. We had enough of him when he was reading the
You got
novel last
the
week, the
Canadian
Canadian
mounted.
mounted, right? And then he starts talking about movies, which I found very interesting. He starts talking about the fact that if it weren't for shower curtain rings, Janet Leigh probably wouldn't have caught her lunch in Psycho. He talks about how, and then he starts asking Neil if he's actually seen Psycho and things like that, and. He says the shower murder left a crap stain on the reputation of shower curtains the size of Texas.
So yeah, of course that makes it fits with the character that he would be an expert on the
Yes.
appearances of shower curtains and shower curtain rings in films.
Yeah, someone should do a podcast, shower curtain rings in movies. I won't do it. Unfortunately, Dell's not around to do it anymore, And then he started talking about the birds. From Hitchcock, which also, caused a lot of problems. People weren't buying parakeets after that.
So, big Hitchcock fan, this Del Griffith is apparently.
Apparently. And, I mean, the conversation goes on really, really long, so I'm not really going to go into the whole thing about it. But I just find it really funny that he did it. And then he talks about the fact that he's traveled so much, he reads anything. And he starts talking about the fact that he's in the middle of a biography on Prince. And then he mentions what Prince's real name is. Do you know what Prince's real name was?
I think, isn't it like it's like Prince Rogers or Prince Nelson Rogers?
You're, wow, that's pretty good. I'm I wouldn't have even come close. It's Rogers Nelson, at least according
Rogers
to
Rogers Nelson. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I just find it's just I understand why they cut these parts out, but still. It's fun to read it and see that where Hughes was trying to go with this in originally. And obviously there's no mention of the magazine article, and in the script, Neil's excuse is that he has a lot of work to do and that's why he can't talk to Del anymore. So those are pretty much the various changes or differences between the script and this minute. So, As I mentioned last week and the week before, every Monday we have a new feature that we're going to be doing, which we're calling Martin Monday.
Martin Monday.
Each of my guests will tell me their top five performances of Steve Martin. So why don't you go ahead, Sean? You want to start with your number five and work your way up to your favorite performance or your best, the way you feel is the best performance?
Yeah, it's tough because – and I've got more than five things listed here. So maybe you just cut me off at some point because, you know, Steve Martin's done a lot of great stuff and had a long career, you know, a lot of different phases where he's done a lot of different types of stuff. And I think this is one of the top, but I don't know if we're talking about this, you know, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. So I won't count that as one of my five. But
what do you mean? Of course you can. That's the point. Okay. You want to count it. Yeah. I want to see where people rank Planes, Trains, and Automobiles on his career.
I mean, this is probably my favorite of his films. I don't know if it's necessarily his best performance, but yeah, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles probably my number one Steve Martin film.
Okay.
You know, some of the others. I mean, some of the great performances. Little Shop of Horrors. Really great as the sadistic dentist in that film. My Blue Heaven as the gangster in Witness Protection in that film. Good. I think it was really good in Spanish, a different type of film. He's done some dramatic stuff, and that's written and directed by David.
Yeah.
Good. Another serious turn in Novocaine. Which is, I think, another instance of playing a dentist.
Oh, wow. I'm not familiar with Novocaine. From there. Wow.
Yeah, so I thought Novocaine was really good. It's sort of a modern-day noir where Steve Martin plays, he's a dentist, and then Helena Bonham Carter is sort of a femme fatale that comes into his life, and she convinces him they're going to do crime. I think it's been a while since I've seen it, but I really enjoyed it at the time. I think she convinces him to like help her kill her boyfriend or her husband. And then I don't want to give away too much.
Yeah, please don't. I haven't seen it.
It's definitely worth seeing if you haven't seen it. It is a really good performance from Steve Martin. And again, it's a serious dramatic performance, which is a nice turn from his usually comedic work, but then you know, he uses some of his special skills as a dentist come into play there. So so Novocaine is that? Let's see.
No,
that's
five. That's five. You got five.
That's five. Oh man, there's so many other great performances, but yeah. So if it must be five, then five it must be.
Yeah. Sorry. So,
but yeah, I also want to say, like, I was going back to his stand-up work. Really good stuff, really interesting stuff that Steve Martin did. And as a musician, I have a couple of his, a couple albums, a couple CDs.
Oh, wow.
Of him playing banjo with a group. And then also he's put out, I think a couple, I only have one, but an album with Edie Brickell of New Bohemians fame.
Wow.
Where he's playing banjo and she's singing. So really a man of many talents.
Yes.
And there's a lot of great stuff that he's done. But of it all, this might be the best. This all might be the best Steve Martin.
You'll have to wait until the end to find out what I think, but I hear what you're saying.
All right.
So the other segment that we do every day is our Off the Beaten Track, where either my guest or myself will tell a short little anecdote about some sort of travel mishap or experience that we've had. So Sean, why don't you give us one little short story of Off the Beaten Track?
Yeah, so this doesn't quite devolve into as much as an affair as Neil goes through here in this film, but I had some experience with weather myself. I'm up in New England, and this is a few years ago. I was I'd scheduled a vacation in New Orleans. I was supposed to fly out of Logan Airport in Boston down to New Orleans, and just so happened a snowstorm rolled into Boston that day. So I'm familiar with airports shutting down where just everything was canceled. The snow was coming down, and unfortunately my flight was sort of in the middle. It's one of those things where if you had an early flight or early in the storm, you could sneak out. But I was in the middle, and I could see I'm with my wife. We're at the airport. We're looking at the windows of the terminal. We can see the plows, working the runways, and they're spraying the de-icer stuff onto the wings of the planes. We were able to. So first we got delayed, and then we were scheduled to take off. They'd given us a time where they were going to actually board the plane. It looked like we were going to get out, and then they had engine trouble. Then we had a mechanical issue that delayed our flight. Eventually we did get out. We did take off. I'm trying to remember if we ended up on a different flight or of a different plane, but we were supposed to have a connection through Philadelphia. So we did not have a direct flight to New Orleans from Boston. And we ended up getting out of Boston, but we missed the connection. So we got to Philly, and at first it was very, very late, and we got to Philadelphia, and we're trying to convince the airline to put us up for the night. And they said, well, if it's, weather related, that's not their fault. So, we're kind of on our own. But we said, well, no, we were delayed for the weather, but we actually were going to take off, and we would have made the connection except for the mechanical difficulties. And we were able to finagle our way into getting a hotel voucher. So the airline put us up for the night. I don't know if that though. I don't know. It's kind of sometimes when you win, you lose.
Exactly.
So of course this is, a free voucher from the airline, and we're regular folks just flying coach. So they weren't sending us to the Ritz. And I won't mention the name of the hotel chain, but I will say my wife will not stay at that hotel chain anywhere ever again. The hotel that they sent us to was the room was the room was not clean. We were not comfortable, and fortunately we were only there for a few hours. I mean I don't remember exactly what time. It was probably well after midnight by the time we got to the hotel, and then we would have left. We would have gotten to the airport early in the morning to try to get the first flight from Philadelphia to complete our trip to New Orleans. So we were only there for a few hours, and I don't think my wife slept. She may have not even laid down. She may have just stood in the bathtub the whole time, not wanting to touch anything. This room was very dirty. Now at that point I'm like, this has been a long day of travel and delays and airports and shuttles. So I was, I got over it. I'm like, listen, I gotta get some rest. I'm gonna get some sleep. But my wife was not happy with the accommodation. Like I said, she will not stay at that hotel. We were actually recently we did a drive for Christmas, and my sister-in-law, my wife's sister, lives outside of Pittsburgh, and again we're up in New England near Boston. And we were looking, it's about a 10-hour drive. We'll try to make it in one day. But if we can't make it, if we need to stop, let's look at some hotels along the route. And I mean, this
anything but that.
Yeah, I mean, it this may be 20 years later, I mean, at least 15, you know, 15 to 20 years after this story occurs. And the one thing she said is, we're not stopping at this particular chain.
Wow.
And I'm sure I won't name names. I'm guessing it's just because this is like the airport near, or the hotel kind of near the airport where most people are just passing through. Like, I don't think, you know, this is indicative of that chain as a whole, but I'll never know, because as long as I'm traveling with my wife, I'm never staying there again.
okay, that's a great story. But it does
have a happy ending. So in the morning, we did catch the shuttle back to the airport, and we were able to complete our journey, and we eventually did make it down to New Orleans only about a day late.
So, okay.
At least it has a happy ending, but we did have, it was a little, some interesting times making our way down there.
Yeah, better than Neil and Dell. It took them a little longer to get to their destination.
Certainly.
All right. Great. So you want to tell everyone how they can get in touch with you, Sean?
Yeah. So I am from Next Scene Podcast, where we cover pop culture one scene at a time. And I do that with my brother, Brian. And you can find that at nextscenepod.com. And we are also at Next Scene Pod on all the social media.
Excellent. And as for me, it's easy to find me. Just for Movie Rob Minute anywhere online. You can find it on Facebook, Twitter, my website. Or just send me an email at movierobminute@movierob.net. So, until tomorrow, you're fucked.
You're fucked.
Sean, you got to do it awesome.
All right. Oh, you're so I thought I missed my chance when you did it, but yeah.